sexy, huh?
We are.
Absolutely.
Hour number three, Darren, Donick, and Chase. We're always ready. We were born ready, especially to talk to our next guy. Weekly chat with him every Wednesday at noon. Tim Hasselbeck, brought to you by Red Spirits and Wine in Bellevue. Tim, what's going on?
Week two of football. What's going on with you guys?
Well, what did you make of week one? How would you assess the play? What stood out to you overall? What did you think of week one in the NFL?
I thought overall the play was good. Thought, things like tackling, stuff like that was good. I think, across college and pro football, to be honest with you, I thought, generally speaking, it wasn't like, man, this is a mess. Look at all the flags. Were there times where there were, pre-snap penalties and things like that? Yeah, there were certainly some of that. But, it wasn't like it was awful. Let's see. I thought generally speaking, the product was good. Obviously if you're a Titans fan, you saw the kicking game issues. And someone actually sent me something. They were kicking game issues in general around the league, and I'm not sure what the reason for that is. But it was a little bit different, obviously, without fans and kind of the energy that brings. But through the television set, it didn't totally feel differently. But I do know that people in the stadiums felt differently about it.
Yeah, we watched a lot of football on Sunday because it rained a lot, so any plans that we had, baseball tournaments, whatever, everything was rained out. So we watched a lot of football, and yes, there were kicking woes all around the league. In fact, there were kickers. There were a lot of teams that trotted out kickers. I was like, who is that? Who is Sloman? Who are these guys? And then they're doinking 29-yarders off the post. And yeah, it didn't look like there were a lot of sharp kickers around the league. Of course, the Titans took it to a new level on Monday night. I know you were brought on. I saw you. I don't know if it was with Van Pelt. I think it was. You were asked about Tom Brady. A lot of people questioning, Tom Brady's performance. You didn't seem to be as concerned, I don't believe, as others. What did you make of the way the Buccaneers?
Well, I flat out said he didn't play well. Yeah, I flat out said he did not play well.
But it was followed up with a butt, though, right?
How it works is, he's the greatest of all time. Yeah, well, do I think it gets better? Yes, I do think it gets better. But he didn't play well. And, you guys know how this works. Like, typically speaking, the greatest of all time does not play well. Career backup analyst says he does not play well, and then I'm, I don't know what I'm talking about. I'm a hater and all that stuff. Like, the reality is, Bruce Arians came out and was like, yeah, he didn't play well. It was really surprising to us because, he had played well. But he didn't. He has two interceptions on the road against a good team. Not a good team, a really good team. And when you do that, you're not going to win those games. So, look, every game is not going to be as difficult as that Saints game. And I think he'll play better than he played in that game. And so, look, I just think that, yeah, it'll I don't think that – I think you almost have to, if you're them, treat that like it was a preseason game.
Okay. Right, because they do have a lot of new parts. And they were trying to get used to the new parts. New Orleans really doesn't.
So it'll take some time with that. And – so it won't be perfect. And I think we do need to be careful. We would do this segment, when I used to be on NFL Live on Mondays, Overreaction Monday. And it was really a segment that was born out of Eric Mangini's frustration with the fact that, early in the season, we're like, okay, hey, Mike McCarthy should be fired. You know what I mean? It's like, well, hold on a second. He was just named the head coach. The offseason was what it was. So, we would do that. And, it was kind of a joke, but at the same time, you know, it's what fans do and it's what people, you know, kind of react to. And so, look, I think that if we, anyone who thinks they know a team for sure after watching them for 1 week in this situation, I would tell you is wrong, you know, just because there's going to be so much change, so much significant change for all of these teams from week one to week two, and certainly from week one to week eight.
I think the one thing that jumped out at me in that game is I do wonder how that, like, it looks good, right? We, I don't want to say paper champions, the roster looked good on paper. And you've got all these big names everybody's heard of, but until very, very late in the game, and Mike Evans has a touchdown when they're already out of it, Mike Evans didn't have a catch. And, you know, you're trying to – I didn't – there was, like, no real plan with, like, Ronald Jones and Fournette. Like, okay, is this really how you're going to use Fournette? Like you got Fournette for this? And I don't know. I just – O.J. Howard all of a sudden has now seen a ton of balls where Jameis Winston really didn't – I didn't feel like throw to O.J. Howard a bunch. So I'm just trying to figure out what their real plan is, like how they're going to keep everybody happy.
Yeah, I would say this one about Mike Evans. Yes, he didn't have a catch till late, but Brady tried to hit him on a seam that was called, you know, defensive pass interference. And so, it's not going to show up that Mike Evans had a catch, but, you know, Brady was going to him, and it would have been a 30-yard gain. So, you know, if Mike Evans has two catches for 67 yards and a touchdown, like, is it a career day? No, but I don't think we're sitting there being like, well, Mike Evans really wasn't involved. So I do think there's an element of that. Look, a lot was made about is this Arians or is it Brady? And from watching that offense, it looked much more like a Bruce Arians offense than a bunch of the stuff that Brady was, you know, has done throughout his career. So I would expect when a quarterback doesn't play well, like you got to listen to the quarterback a little bit more if that's the case, and do more of what he's used to doing. So I think they need to do that. Like the Mike Evans play that I'm talking about, that's actually a New England play, you know, a play that a lot of people have tried to, you know, steal from New England. So, yeah, I think if you were to just compare, obviously the two guys are going to be compared a lot this year. The Patriots offense totally changed. It completely was different, and it was catered to that's playing quarterback. I didn't feel that with, you know, watching the Buccaneers play with Brady as their quarterback.
Tim Hasselbeck is with us. And, Tim, when the Jaguars made the move to let Fournette go, you started hearing some people saying, well, are they just trying to pare their roster down and tank, try to get the high first-round pick? All of this was thrown out there. But, obviously, they've still got some good players somewhere along the line. We just listened to Mike Vrabel. He's very high on Minshew. He thinks he's a very good quarterback. How much did you learn about the Jaguars, knowing that we're in the context of this is only 1 week?
Yeah, well, I think the context of 1 week, especially when you play a team that, you know, in the Colts, that, their quarterback turns it over a couple times, left some plays on the field, and so, you know, and then the Jags don't turn it over. Look, I will, just be honest about Minshew. Like I had, you know, last year I was skeptical of him being a legitimate long-term answer at the quarterback position. But, you know, the more he plays and the more you just see him compete and some of the things that he can do, like I'm starting to get this like Jeff Garcia vibe from Gardner Minshew in terms of what he can do. Like you look at him, it's not always pretty. It's not how you would coach it up, but you know, there's a lot of it that doesn't seem like, hey, that's how it would work. But the competitive nature of how he plays and how people kind of respond to it is significant. And I think that, I think there's an element of like, that's what's going on in Jacksonville with him. So yeah, look, even teams that are, you know, unloading contracts on their roster. Think back to the Dolphins a year ago. They already weren't good. They started unloading talent. Everyone's accusing them of tanking. But they would still go out and win some games. And they would go out and they'd have players that compete like crazy every Sunday. And I think that that's probably kind of the collection of guys that you've got going on down in Jacksonville right now. So, yeah, like if you're the Titans or you're any other, you know, AFC South opponent of theirs, like, yeah, you can't – it is still pro football that, you know, you're not just saying, hey, listen, they don't have any good players. That's obviously not the case.
It sounded to me like Mike Vrabel was taking a page out of the old Lou Holtz book. I can remember interviewing Lou Holtz when Vanderbilt was about to play Notre Dame. They were a national powerhouse. Vanderbilt was awful. And he made Vanderbilt out to be this amazing offensive machine coached by Rod Dauhauer. They were going to come in there. It was early in the season. You got to watch out. Like, he always did that. Mike Vrabel, I don't think he's comfortable with the Titans being a 9-point favorite here. It seems like you got to. He wants to make sure that they don't get overconfident here.
So whether it's Lou Holtz, whether it's Bill Belichick or Tom Coughlin and Mike Vrabel in this situation, the routine for nearly every coach that I have ever been around is this. Early in the week, you get a scouting report. You get a scouting report and it's like, hey, this is Gardner Minshew, 6 foot, 215, but this guy's an amazing playmaker, okay? You're hammering it home all week. Like, you basically a highlight reel of every player that you're going to face, okay? That's what it is on, Wednesday, basically, okay? So Monday you get the scouting report, and then Wednesday you go, hey, this is what you're dealing with. And then Saturday, in kind of like your last meeting with the group, it's like, all right, okay, we told you all week how amazing these guys are, but now this is what we're going after, and this is how we're going to beat them. So, like, yeah, you're exactly right. I mean, I think it's an unnerving position to be in. I think that if you're the Titans and Vrabel, you feel like, you know what, we went to Denver. That Denver team's going to be way better later in the year than they are right now. We really kind of snuck away with a win because of what happened in our kicking game. And, like, so let's not waste that and lose to a team that we should beat this weekend. So, yeah, there's no doubt that there's an element of that. And if you think about for the Titans, people weren't high on them. Like, being in that position of being like, hey, everyone's expecting you to win, that's not where they had a lot of success last year. And so, coaches are always concerned with, hey, how do we teach our team to play well as favorites? When people expect them to do well, and they're not being criticized a bunch, like, how do we do that? And so I think that, that's one of the challenges as a head coach and, a fairly young head coach.
I don't know if you were actually watching the closing minutes, but Vic Fangio got a lot of criticism for not using his timeouts after one play in particular, when it got to a point where they were clearly in field goal range and they didn't leave themselves any time to go back. Was that an egregious mistake, or do you think, there is an argument for just putting pressure on a kicker that hasn't made a kick?
Yeah, I think that, to your second point, yes. I mean, there is an element of that. Then there's the thought of, like, all right, you want to slow this thing down, save yourself some time, because, that obviously would be helpful to your offense. But also, like, now are you making that person think about it more, right? Because he's obviously thinking about it at that point as well. So, yeah, it's probably the right thing to do to use them. I think he's, admitted as much it now. Is it egregious? I think you can make a compelling argument either way. I will tell you this, watching the Sunday night game in the 4th-and-3 that the Cowboys go for it, I didn't love it. I'm sitting there and I'm like, I don't love it. No one really was being critical of the decision to go for it on 4th-and-3 in that situation. And then no one really talked about it afterwards, which somewhat surprised me. Now it comes out. Obviously, Mike McCarthy has embraced analytics, and that was a big part of his year off of football, and everyone seems to think that 4th-and-3 in that environment, it was the right thing to do. Well, they didn't get it. And it really, I think, ended up being a huge, difference in the game because of analytics, right? I mean, I don't know if you guys have talked about this or agreed with it, but, like, it did it right, analytics or not.
It's a fascinating discussion how the whole – and we went through it a lot last year with some of the tough decisions that Mike Vrabel was forced to make. I thought he kept his poise very well, and I think he's improved overall in that decision-making. And it, rather than having the – it's a balance between your emotion, your feel, and what the analytics are telling you, right? So I thought overall it showed a lot of growth by the team that they didn't let the fact that their kicker was having a ridiculously bad night beat them. Whereas last year they lost two or three games where that they just couldn't overcome that kind of thing.
Yeah, I just think, look, I am not a anti-analytics guy. I think that it's great that the sport is embracing it. I think that there are certainly times that it's like it just makes sense to be like, look, I mean, we're playing the percentages here, and the percentages are overwhelmingly in our favor, even if it's contrary to what the popular belief has been. But like, Will, you're a baseball guy. Like, there have to be scenarios where you're like, you know what, like, they say don't bat this guy right here, but, man, in every big moment, there's something that just happens to this guy where he has a laser focus and finds a way to get on base, you know, or, you know, he's over his pitch count, and do we really want to leave him in? But then you're like, man, I literally would love to have this guy competing, you know, alongside me at any time. Like,
yeah,
I'm going to let him compete.
If I'm going down, right? I'm like, going down with this guy because I love his makeup.
Element, yeah, isn't there an element of that you have to?
You have
you
to.
Also have to. Right. Otherwise, we might as well just hire robots.
Right. Play simulated. Yeah. There's a people. There's a balance. There's knowing the makeup of your team and your players to go with the numbers. That you have to marry those two.
Yeah, I just think about it. I think back to Steve Spurrier. One of the things I thought that he did a great job of when I played for him was that, like, if there was a defensive back that was getting into it with a wide receiver and they were jawing and just, you know, and competing and, you know, pushing and shoving after the whistle and stuff, like, he would then go try to double move that guy. Well, like, there's no analytics for that. You know, what he is doing is he's seeing guys compete. He's now anticipating an overly aggressive corner, and so he wants to double move him. And there isn't math for that. That is a guy that was a really good competitor as a player, understanding the competitive nature of the field and people, and then trying to take advantage of it to use it to be the advantage to your own team. And, you know, I always took a lot from that. I think there's a lot to that alone.
Tim Hasselbeck is with us, ESPN NFL analyst, presented by Red Spirits and Wine here on ESPN 102.5 The Game.
Tim, Chase told us earlier today on the show that he used to play soccer 3-4 division when he was three years old. Mm-hmm. What do you think the analytics
3U.
Showed? 3U. What do you think the analytics would have shown us in that league for Chase?
Here's what I think it would have told us. It would have been like, hey, this is a 4-and-under group, but we've got a 3-year-old out here dominating the field.
He wants to play up.
Okay? So I think the analytics would have been like, hey, if you can invest in somebody right now in their future, we've identified that 3-year-old. I think that's what I tell you.
There was a person that gave those analytics, they are now an Uber driver. Okay, they are no longer in analytics. Their career is long over.
I looked 6 when I was 3, so you know.
You did look the part. There's no doubt about that.
Tim, I know they didn't win. The Bengals didn't win the game, but Joe Burrow's debut. What did you think about how he played? Overall, had the rushing touchdown, but what did you think about him?
I think he generally played poorly. Like, I think there were layups that he needs to hit that he didn't hit. I mean, there were guys open that he didn't hit. He obviously missed a long one that could have been a touchdown, but he also missed just underneath stuff that should have been gimme completions that he didn't hit. The interception on trying to create some offense that Melvin Ingram picked off is a horrible play by the quarterback. So I would say that he generally did not play well. Now, what I would say I was really encouraged about, and you should be if you're a Bengals fan or a Joe Burrow fan, is, you know, they end up getting an opportunity to win the game. He, in a two-minute drive scenario, does a really good job, actually, creates some offense, you know, has a little bit of a scramble. And then he, for all intents and purposes, throws the game-winning touchdown. You know, A.J. Green, a veteran receiver, probably needs to do a better job of not pushing off. And if he does, Joe Burrow throws the game-winning touchdown after, you know, basically 3 3/4 of football where he really struggles. So, you know, I think that you have to be encouraged by kind of the mental toughness of playing good in the most critical moment after you had been struggling. And so I think there are some good takeaways from that, and I do think that he'll play better, you know, as the season goes along. He'll have his bumps and bruises, but I think he'll play better most Sundays than he did this past Sunday.
We brought up on Monday, and perhaps this was a part of Overreaction Monday, but how, you know, the NFC West looks to be a pretty competitive and fun division. You obviously have Seattle and San Francisco that kind of duked it out last year, but L.A. appears to be better. And now with Kyler Murray and DeAndre Hopkins together in Arizona, they look to be improved. So would you agree with that statement that you think all four of those teams could make it interesting in the NFC?
So when I was on with Scott Van Pelt on Sunday night, he was making the case for it being the most competitive division in all of the NFL. And my reaction, Chase, is exactly what you're saying, which is I think any of those four teams could end up winning it. And that's not because it's like, hey, they're all equally as bad. But I just – look, Sean McVay didn't forget how to coach. He's a good coach, and he didn't forget how to coach. And 2 years ago, that was a really, really good team. And they looked like – they've gotten back to what they've been doing. Seattle with Pete Carroll and Russell Wilson. You know, we've all talked about how good that Niners, you know, roster is in general. And I think Kyle Shanahan's a very good coach and a good play caller. And then when you look at Arizona, I mean, shoot, like they have one of the most exciting, you know, kind of up and coming young players. They have one of the best receivers in the game. They have one of the best receivers ever to play the game. So there's a lot they're doing right there. And defensively, they have a lot of talent. So, yeah, that's a really good group. I think health will be paramount in that division. But, yeah, any four of those teams, I think, are good enough to win it. And then when they do, be good enough to do something in the postseason.
So looking at these young quarterbacks, and when I say young, I'll say first or second year, if you had to pick one to build your team around or to put on your team, let's say, who are you taking right now?
Well, I would just say, so first or second year, and I'm, you know, maybe I've got to slip my mind, but, like, you know, it's not Haskins or Daniel Jones. You know, a second-year guy, like, to me, Kyler Murray would be somebody that I think there's an element of what he can do, what an elite kind of special athlete he is. You know, I would want to build around that. There's so many things he can do with what football is today. You know, when I played, which I guess is, you know, over a decade ago now, but, like, you know, if people start talking about football in, like, you know, in 2008, well, the football in 2008, nobody was trotting an offense out on the field like New England did this past weekend, or like the Ravens did this past weekend. Nobody. But you're just seeing so much more of that, that's just, with that being the case, like, I think we are trending that direction, no doubt. And, you know, would I like Kyler to be a little bit bigger? Yeah, of course I would. But I think he's already a pretty polished passer. He's got plenty of arm strength. He's an outstanding runner. He's a good decision maker. He's an elite athlete playing the most important position on your team.
Allen Robinson, is he going to get moved? Clearly he's not happy in Chicago.
Yeah, I think it's always a bad look when your team's got an amazing win, you know, rallying around your quarterback who struggled last year, and now, you know, the only thing you're talking about is your contract. Like,
yep.
That's you have to find a way to figure that out. And so, look, what they decide to do about it, you know, I'm not sure. But, yeah, I would think if you can, and then you – but the problem is like you also need to support this quarterback that you need to play well. So, you know, you better have a solution if you do move on from him.
Was it the Lions? Was it that? I mean, that was truly like blessed. There was a Southern thing, right? Like bless their hearts, right? I mean, it's just like you got to be kidding me.
Well, and you know something, you just look around at, like, we're all going to move on here, right? And so, you know, you guys obviously know what happened. I mean, that Titans could easily be all in one. You know, the Lions should be 1-0. I mean, they drop a touchdown pass. The Bengals, at a minimum, should have, we talked about that scenario, touchdown pass, but really, minimum should have been going into overtime.
Right.
I mean, just
you didn't like the OPI call?
Of all the things, like, in the Dallas game, as Dallas.
Well, there was one on AJ Green too in the Cincinnati game.
Yeah. So that's what I'm saying. So to me, like that was OPI. That's the right call. Look, I even think it was the right call on Jalen Ramsey. You know, him getting pushed off on, you know, by the Dallas receiver. I'm forgetting who it was at the time, but like the go route that really was giving Dallas an opportunity late in that game. I did think that was offensive pass.
It was Gallup, wasn't
Ramsey
it?
Did a great,
yeah, it was Gallup.
Michael Gallup. Yeah, so, you know, Ramsey does a great job of selling it. But, yeah, look, that's an extended arm that I do think helps with separation. And so just think of all these games where it's just literally one break here or there that changes, you know, a win and a loss. So, yeah, for Detroit, that's going to make them sick. I mean, and think about the confidence boost that it had to be for Trubisky.
Yep.
I mean, it had to be.
No doubt. Hey, go have a drink at Red Spirits and Wine in Bellevue on us for your great work today. Thank you.
You know what? I feel that's close by, man. I'm going to have to.
I know. That's why I suggested it. I thought it was a good suggestion. Hey, thanks for doing this. Have a great rest of your week.
By the way, that picture you sent me comparing Tom Brady to everybody, that was mean. It was dirty. It was low.
Really? I thought it was funny. It was funny, I thought. No? You thought it was mean-spirited?
Mm-hmm. And by the way, I don't know if you've seen that video of that, like, 6-year-old football player running around. Have you guys seen this?
No.
Okay, but there's a 6-year-old football player that looks like he's at least 100 pounds heavier than every kid on the field, and he's running for touchdowns and stuff. I mean, it looks like a Saturday Night Live skit. That's what Chase looked like in 4 and under soccer.
Mm. Right. There you go. You can see what the people saw, the analytics people.
Right.
Well, that's good. By the way, he also exactly admitted right to us when he played one season of basketball at 10, he scored in the wrong basket, wrong hoop. There was that, too. That's not good for analytics.
He was better in soccer.
I mean, yeah.
Should have stuck with soccer.
It's easy to get disoriented. Hey, it's easy to get disoriented.
It's a tough game. You know, it's a tough game.
My guess was there was probably a pretty girl that he had a crush on in the stands. You know what I mean? Can't fault him for that.
Yeah, okay. All right. Hey, good stuff. Thanks for doing this.
Thanks, best friend.
See you, fellas.
Tim Hasselbeck every Wednesday at high noon, brought to you by Red Spirits and Wine in Bellevue. We will come back with more here on Darren, Donick, and Chase, ESPN 102.5, The Game.